Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 164 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today her insight. Interesting. We have a terrific show coming up. And before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. We look forward to hearing from you, reviewing all of your feedback, and heck, we just love to hear from you. So rate and review when we're done. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Let's see now. So are you really self-aware? Do you know what that means? And if you do know what it means, why is it so important that you have this understanding about yourself? What's that all about? Well, we have with us Dr. Tasha Urich, and she is the author of a fabulous new book, which she's going to tell us about in 2 seconds. And she's really delved into this whole issue of what self-awareness is. She's an organizational psychologist, researcher, and New York Times best-selling author. The book was Bankable Leadership. And she does have a PhD in organizational psychology and is a founder of the Urich Group, where she's helped thousands of leaders and teams improve their effectiveness through greater self-awareness. Dr. Urich, welcome on board.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I'm going to start calling you Tasha because you want to be called Tasha. So that's cool with me. Now, tell us all the title of this fabulous new book of yours.
So the title is Insight, The Surprising Truth About How Others See Us, How We See Ourselves, and Why the Answers Matter More Than We Think.
Whoa, the surprising. Huh. So there's some eye openers here. Well, I know for a fact, and I'm going to speak for all of our listeners out there. Oh my gosh, she can be so generalizable. And just say that I bet a whole bunch of us just have no clue as to what the heck self-awareness is. So tell us what it is.
It's such a good starting point because I think it's a term we throw around. Usually we throw it around in my experience when someone is not self-aware, at least we don't perceive them to be. But my research team and I have been scientifically investigating self-awareness for almost the last 5 years. And the first thing that we did when we started this program, of course, was we said, you know, what is it really? So we looked at over 1,000 scientific studies to really try to figure out what were the consistent themes and how, you know, we see this critically important skill. And what we came up with is that self-awareness is made up of two types of self-knowledge, both of which are equally important. So the first one is something we call internal self-awareness, which means seeing ourselves clearly, knowing who we are, what we value, what we're passionate about, what our patterns of behavior are. Equally important, though, is something called external self-awareness, and that means knowing how other people see us, understanding our impact on them, being able to read a room. And what was, you know, again, using the word surprising from the subtitle, what was surprising to me personally was that these two types of self-awareness are not always related. So to be self-aware, we have to have both, but there are so many people for whom, you know, we are doing better at one than the other. We might have a clearer idea of how we're seen and forget what we want, or vice versa. So it's a surprisingly complex topic.
I think a lot of people really look at the issue of self-awareness and just assume it's something as simple as, well, I know how I'm feeling when I'm hanging out with other people. No, that's not that. That's just a teeny tiny piece of what this is. It's a much richer definition the way you have presented it. So why is it so important to be self-aware? What if someone's out there just listening to this saying, eh, so what? So what? So how do you answer the so-whaters?
The simple way to respond to that is that we found, again, scientifically, that self-awareness is the secret ingredient for success in the 21st century. If you look at people who are self-aware and the benefits they see, they're better communicators, they're more confident, they perform better at work, they're more promotable, they're better leaders, better parents, better spouses, better friends. And if you think about it, the easiest way to understand just how important it is sometimes to look at people who are not self-aware. So maybe, you know, you think about somebody who just is the biggest pain to be around, and they think that they're delightful, or the boss who you work for who thinks that they're just motivational and inspirational, and in reality, they make you want to cry in your office. So essentially, you know, if we can develop this skill, if we can learn to see ourselves clearly, completely, compassionately, there's almost nothing we can't improve in our lives. And I think that's why sometimes it's so hard to think about, is it is truly something that can impact everything very positively.
So, you know, why is this a rough one for women?
And that is a very interesting topic in and of itself, because there are lots of different ways we can be less self-aware. So the traditional example, and the one that I was just referencing, are the people who maybe are overly confident about their contributions or their skills or, you know, anything. But what I see with women is that very often our self-awareness journey, it has some different challenges associated with it. When I work with very senior level female executives in corporations, for example, it's more likely for me to see them underestimating their contributions than overestimating their contributions. And it's easy to say, oh, well, you know, it's important to be humble. We don't want to be seen as bossy. But truly, if you don't fully appreciate the value that you bring, not just to your work environment, but to your personal life, you're setting a limit for your own success. You're setting a limit for your own happiness. You're setting a limit for really your own well-being. So that's something that I think for many women we need to ask ourselves is, yes, it's important to know my weaknesses or my limitations so that I don't make bad decisions, but it's just as important and sometimes even more difficult to know all the gifts we have and what we're doing so well.
When you're looking at this whole issue of women, what's the biggest difference between men and women on this?
That's what I think it is. I think, you know, and I hate to speak in generalities, but there is some evidence that on average, men might be a little more likely to overestimate themselves versus women are likely or a little bit more likely to underestimate themselves.
I see. Okay. So their self-conception and feelings of self-worth and self-esteem are different in that regard. I see. Okay. So, you know, why are most people so unself-aware? Meaning that when you're just rolling around through life, no matter who they are, male, female, why is it that they really don't have that sense of self-awareness? A, they were never told that self-awareness was even a thing. B, they blew it off once they were told it was a thing. What's going on?
What you mentioned are absolutely factors that affect us all. What we found in our research generally is that 95% of us believe that we're self-aware, but the closer percentage of the people that actually are is closer to 10 to 15%. And so the joke I always make there is that means that on a good day, 80% of us are lying to ourselves about whether we're lying to ourselves. And does that make us bad people? No. Does it make us hopeless? Definitely not. That's the good news. But there are so many factors both within us and in our external world that are conspiring to prevent us from seeing ourselves clearly. So, you know, there's really three overall reasons. The first is that we as humans have these built-in blind spots. By virtue of, you know, a lot of really complicated physiological things, we were very unable in many cases to understand what's really behind our thoughts or our emotions or our behaviors. We tend to be fairly blind to those things. And the problem is not only do we not know that we're blind, but we tend to be even more confident than we should be about what's really going on. The second thing is a tendency to want to see ourselves with rose-colored glasses. That's something I've named the feel-good effect, right? Why have our friend tell us that our new haircut really isn't that great when we can hear that it's the best haircut we've ever had? And I liken it to refined sugar. You can eat an entire box of Milk Duds, and it feels great when you're doing it, but in the long run, it really can get in the way of your health and well-being. And the same is true for seeing ourselves clearly. It can be tough, but ultimately, it's exactly what we need to empower ourselves to live our best life. And then the third factor, and this is probably a whole podcast in and of itself, is our external environment. We live in a world with social media and with the self-esteem movement and reality TV that's causing us to be more self-absorbed and less self-aware. And this cult of self, as we call it, is something that many of us don't even know we've been recruited to join. But it becomes even more difficult to push past that when that's what we're seeing in our day-to-day existence. So, not only do we sometimes not think about it as much as we should, but we have all of those barriers that are in our way that are essentially invisible.
Huh. As a physician, I see this lack of self-awareness all the time. And, it's a real challenge. When you know that you're not as physically active, that you're not eating, whole foods in a nourishing way, that you're not getting enough sleep and whatever, but you write a different narrative for your brain. Things are really okay. I'm all right. It's okay. What extra 50 pounds? It's like you have to, when you talk about the rose-colored glasses, you have to create your own world to be able to kind of justify how you feel. And you think that that's self-awareness. But what you've done is you've written a story, and the story is not based on reality, but it's something that is palatable to you. Does that make sense?
I think you hit the nail on the head. It can be everything from our relationships to our job performance to our health. And part of the journey of self-awareness, sort of ironically, is making the decision to say, okay, maybe I think I am self-aware. What if I wasn't? What if there was more to learn about myself than I even, imagine is possible at this time? And so by letting go of that certainty, that's what allows us to open ourselves up to getting that clarity that we so desperately need to make the right decisions.
Huh, interesting. So talk to me about feedback from others. When it comes to feedback from others, why do we get so little of it? Do we need it in the first place? What can we do to get better feedback?
So I tell a story in the book that really says it all. It's a coaching client of mine who had a pretty disastrous work presentation, and she directly asked a member of her team, who she really felt she had a good, trusting relationship with. She said, how did that go? Do you think it could have gone better? And he said, very directly, oh my gosh, no, it went great. You did such an excellent job. I was really impressed. And then it got back to her several days later that same team member had been telling everyone in the company what a disaster her presentation was. And, you sort of think about that. She even went out of her way to ask someone directly for feedback. And not only had he not given her the truth, he had out and out lied. So again, going back to this question, does that make us bad people? I don't think so. If you look back to the early days of humans and our existence, it was important for us to stay together in groups in order to literally survive. And so in some way, we're programmed to not rock the social apple cart and to not say something that would make someone feel hurt or offended or that would jeopardize our relationship with them. And what I tell people, my coaching clients and everybody else, is that it doesn't mean we can't get honest feedback. It just means that we have to work a little bit harder to get the truth. And there's one very specific approach that most people can take, and it's not necessarily what we think about. We like to over-engineer the feedback conversation itself. You know, how should I ask this person? And that's all important, but what we've discovered in our research is there's something even more important in terms of getting good feedback, and that's finding the people in your life who are what we call loving critics. So if you think about everybody you know that you're close to, there probably aren't very many people that fit the following two criteria. Number one, are you 100% sure or as close as you can possibly be that they have your best interest at heart? They want you to be successful. And then number two, are you equally sure that they would be willing to tell you the truth even when it's tough, especially when it's tough? And I think so many of us have a lot of people that we, you know, love and adore that maybe fit one of those criteria. But the power is finding these loving critics. And what we found from our research is most highly self-aware people only have about a handful of them. You know, you kind of imagine between 3 and 5 really solid loving critics. But if you can establish the expectation and if you can ask them very directly to give you that feedback, the odds are you're going to get some honest and constructive and candid information about how you can be better.
Wow. You know, I think we can all be incredibly grateful for a handful of people in our life who would honestly say, where did you get that dress? Take it back and slap the person who sold it to you because all they wanted was money and you look horrible in it. It's a wrong color. It's the whole thing is bad. It's not flattering and whatever. I think it's really important to have people like that in your life. And, you know, this whole issue of feedback is so tough. That's why, you know, when you're a CEO of a corporation or you're a leader, no matter where you are, it is ridiculously important not to surround yourself with a bunch of yes people. You know, you've got to have some level of honest, bottom line, transparent, authentic, genuine feedback, no matter, you know, and just putting aside, you know, basically parking ego at the door and just sitting there and just letting it rip. You know, it's important. So I think that the issue of feedback is critical to this whole pursuit of self-awareness. So what is the best way to deal with unself-aware people in our lives? Because, honey, you know, our lives are populated by people like this.
They're everywhere, aren't they? They live among us every
God.
Day.
Everywhere.
And this is the most common question I get. And I have sort of two answers that maybe even contradict themselves a little bit, but let me give this a try. So the first thing is, we can't always force other people to become more self-aware just because we see the need for them to do that. So, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And what I tell people is, what if instead of trying to fix that person, you took that energy and devoted it to your own self-awareness journey, which is really the only one at the end of the day that any of us has control over, is that journey for ourselves. That said, it doesn't make it any easier to deal with these people if that happens. So there are going to be situations where it's the right timing, it's the right situation, you have the right relationship, maybe to offer something to someone that you think they might be missing. I tell a couple of stories in the book where, you know, one example was a 21-year-old pre-med student was able to give her best friend's dad some of the best feedback he ever got about how he was showing up in his family and in his personal life. So we can fight the odds, but what can be even more effective in our dealing with these people often can just be managing our own reactions to them. So there's a lot of research that says that when we reframe a situation, when we can see it through a slightly different angle, it reduces how stressful, you know, these negative situations can be. So one really easy tool that I actually developed when I was working for an incredibly delusional boss is something that I call the laugh track. So imagine this delusional person says, you know, something just so unkind or offensive or just anything that really could upset you. Instead of sitting there and being upset, what I started doing was imagining that I was on the set of a sitcom. And instead of being my horrible, delusional boss, this gentleman was another star on the sitcom. And every time he said something that was so ridiculous, the audience would laugh. You know, you think about Lou Grant on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. In reality, he wouldn't have been a very great boss to work for. But because he was on the set of a sitcom, it was so exaggerated that it was comical. And so that's just one example. But anytime we can pull away from that situation and try to challenge ourselves to see it differently, that's a very easy, practical way to manage these people as much as we can.
Well, I think you're absolutely, you know, right on. I think people get caught in the weeds, and what they end up doing is spinning around and getting entangled with whatever that boss or somebody in your life is doing when they're unself-aware. And, you know, step back, take a deep breath, and realize that, hey, guess what? You know, this is very much like, a sitcom. It really is. You know, it's funny you should mention that. I do that all the time, you know, to be able to, keep a perspective. I love humor. So the sitcom thing works for me. So when you go to an airport, that's the best place, you know, and you see all around you just characters. I mean, just characters. I mean, the whole thing is out of control. To me, it's just another episode of fill in the blank, whatever you want to call it. You know, I call it Airport. And you see people yelling and screaming at that poor little, you know, the ticket person and all the rest. It's like, why? Why? It's like, why are you doing that? But then in many respects, that's what this is. Just characters living out their, you know, very chaotic lives and projecting on other people, and you can't get absorbed in that. You just step back. I think that mental stepping back is life-saving because you don't want to, you know, get swallowed up in the toxicity of it all, because unself-aware people throw out toxicity. They do, right? And you don't want that.
I totally agree. And the other thing to think about, too, is just the to recognize the humanity of these people anyway, and to have, you know, as mean as they're being, to have compassion for that journey that they're taking. And it's not our journey to take. And, you know, sometimes we can wish them the best and really hope that they're able to get on a better path.
Oh, yeah. There's absolutely no question about it. This has been fantastic. Dr. Tasha Urich, so tell me, and all of our readers, the best website where they can learn more about your work.
So the best place is to go to insight-book.com, and you'll find a number of things, but one of them is actually a free quiz to assess your current level of self-awareness. You fill out 14 questions, you send it to a friend who knows you well, and then you get a high-level read on where you're at in your journey.
And tell them the name of that fantastic book again.
I would be glad to. It's Insight, The Surprising Truth About How Others See Us, How We See Ourselves, and Why the Answers Matter More Than We Think.
Oh, man. Just grab this damn book because I, you know, given the statistics, 85% of us are flicking clueless right now. So come on, let's get a clue. With your wonderful work. Thank you so much, Tasha, for being on the Her podcast for this eye-opening episode. And listen, everyone, you've got to run over to iTunes right now and rate and review the show, because this was a good one, a really good one. Be self-aware. Rate and review it, for crying out loud. We're just sitting here waiting to hear from you. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Her podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.